Hi, everybody. It's Bean, and welcome to an all-new episode of Great Moments in Weed History. On this episode, we are going to get in touch with the spiritual side of cannabis, and to do that, we're going to speak with Mark S. Ferrara. He is an associate professor at the State University of New York, and more importantly, for our purposes, he is the author of the book Sacred Bliss, A Spiritual History of Cannabis. Now, a couple of episodes ago on this program, we had an episode with the comedian, musician, and improviser extraordinaire Reggie Watts, where we talked about cannabis and creativity. And I mentioned in that episode that as we sort of spread the good word about the health benefits of cannabis as a medicine and as an aid to wellness, shall we say, and as we have increasingly won the conversation about the need to end the prohibition against cannabis, it's really high time to start having these more, shall we say, elevated conversations about things like using cannabis as a creative tool. I think we all got some great insights on that from our conversation with Reggie Watts. And now this weed, happy Weedness Day, everyone, we are going to elevate even further beyond creativity into the realm of spirituality. Don't worry, this is not about to become a religious podcast by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think this idea of cannabis and spirituality is one that does not get talked about enough, particularly considering how far back in history the spiritual use of cannabis goes, something we're going to talk about with our guest this weed, and how many people today still integrate cannabis into their spiritual practice, whether that's in a formal way as part of a established religious, spiritual, or ceremonial practice, or simply something that you do yourself communing with this plant and the larger universe. For a lot of people, when you talk about cannabis and spirituality in the modern world, one of the first things that comes to mind is the Rastafari faith that in many ways has been spread around the world by reggae music. And in our episode about reggae legend Peter Tosh, part of the original Wailers with Bob Marley and an incredible artist in his own right, including his incendiary and legendary solo album Legalize It. In that episode about Peter Tosh and his journey with music and cannabis, we also trace the intertwined history of the Rastafari faith and spiritual cannabis use in Jamaica, both of which actually had their roots in India, and that's owing to a large mass migration of people from India to Jamaica in the mid-1800s. Well, those immigrants brought along with them a plant they called ganja. Ganja being a Sanskrit word that was soon adopted by Jamaicans. So we see this link all the way back to this very, very old, thousands of years BC tradition of spiritual cannabis use in India. That's something we talked a lot more in depth about in an episode we called The High Hindu Holiday. In that one, Abdullah actually told me the story of how once a year, Hindus celebrate cannabis and the god Shiva with an all-night festival of fasting, meditation, chanting, dancing, and cannabis in the form of a drink called pung. We even gave a recipe for that and enjoy a delicious glass of it during the episode. I also feel when we're talking about cannabis and spirituality that I need to note the most popular episode of this podcast all over the world out of nearly 100 tales of great moments in weed history that we have on our podcast feed is the one titled, Did Jesus Use Cannabis to Perform Healing Miracles? I'm not going to try to make that case here. I'm going to direct you to that episode. I think you're going to find a lot more evidence that points to that kind of medicinal spiritual use of cannabis in the Old and New Testament. And I'm just going to say, I'm not saying our episode about Jesus and weed is the greatest, pot story ever told. I'm just saying it gets a lot of downloads. If you haven't listened, please check it out. And based on the DMs, this episode does blow a lot of minds. Now, before we get to this weeds interview about cannabis and spirituality, I do want to pause and say rest in plants to music legend David Crosby. Cros was our guest on Great Moments in Weed History back in 2021, just before his 80th birthday. He was both a delightful person to share a sesh with, and he had a wealth of stories and surprisingly very detailed memories about the connoisseur cannabis scene of the 1960s and 70s. In addition to being enshrined in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, both as a founding member of the Byrds and for his work in Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Sometimes Young, David Crosby was kind of the ultimate weed guy of the 60s and 70s. He was known not just for having cannabis, but for really seeking out the best and for, a guy who owned his own sailboat and sort of liked the outlaw lifestyle. He knew a lot of cannabis smugglers of the era, something we talked about in the episode. I really would encourage you to listen to that one as well. It's one of my favorites. But just for a taste, I'm going to splice in a couple of highlights from our interview with David Crosby, which you can find in its entirety by scrolling back in the podcast feed. And then I promise you, we will light one up to send the Cros on his way right before the theme song this episode.
The pot that we had in the 60s early was dog poop, bricked up, full of seeds, kilos coming up from Mexico, in truck beds. I don't know who in Mexico knew about sinsame and knew how to do it, but somebody did down in Michoacan. As soon as we got that stuff, it was an entire different world. It was really good plant. It was really good flowers, stunningly strong. But there was no shortage of really stunning pot back then. We were getting actual Thai stick that was real Thai stick on the stick.
How much did an ounce of weed cost you at that time?
When I started buying ounces of weed, it was like $25. We were playing up in Napa, and somebody put a bud down on the front of the stage. Honest to God, all three of us, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, all went for the bud.
Wait, was this the beginning of the problems in the band?
No, it was just too good a looking bud. It was just the most stunning bud you ever saw. It was the size of your arm. At least your forearm and your hand was at least that big and huge and glorious and beautiful and stinky and wonderful. And I got it, but I had to fight Nash for it.
A couple of quick notes before we jump into this weeds episode. When Mark, our guest, identifies the Vedic tradition as offering potentially the oldest written account of spiritual cannabis use, that refers to a body of ancient religious texts known as Vedas, from India that constitute the foundational scriptures of Hinduism. Again, this is something you can dig deeper into in our episode titled The High Hindu Holiday. In this episode, Mark and I do talk a lot about cannabis history in antiquity, but we also dig into what you can do right now if you want to explore the spiritual side of getting high for yourself. How do we set that intention and how do we sort of open that portal? I'm somebody who grew up really without any organized religion. It's not something that I have sought out since. It's something that I tend to be pretty skeptical about, as I am skeptical about all forms of hierarchy and authority over our lives. But I do think that we can all benefit from trying to access that spiritual part of ourselves. Now, if you're a hardcore atheist, don't at me. I have no particular dog in this fight, dog being God backwards. But I do recognize that for myself and other people, the direct experience of consuming cannabis, of accessing the consciousness that this plant brings into our minds and our hearts, and I will say our souls, can be very alleviating of the spiritual pain that any, I think, thinking and feeling person must find themselves in a world as fucked up as ours, and also can help us access those feelings of transcendence that allow us to still find the joy, the beauty, the awe, and the splendor of existence. So, what a plant. What a plant. And as mentioned, of course, this ability to engender a more open spiritual state is just one of the benefits of cannabis. Now, if you would like to benefit this podcast and help us share these great moments in weed history with people all over the world, I invite you to do so by joining us on Patreon. All you have to do is go to greatmomentsinweedhistory.com. Long URL, easy to remember, greatmomentsinweedhistory.com. That's where you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. You will get the video version of this podcast. You'll get to see this joint I'm holding up. You'll get to hang out with us in this beautiful weed field every week and see our guests. You could put $5 on it if you want to throw in a little more on that shit. And for just a bit more than that, you can get a signed copy of my book, How to Smoke Pot Properly, mailed directly to where you live. Most importantly, you'll get access to every single episode of this podcast because we are only once every other weed or once every other week here on the main podcast feed with our Great Moments in Weed History classic episodes. But this is still a weedly or once a week podcast every once a weekly weed. You know what I'm saying. For Patreon supporters, you will get access to the secret sessions, which happen only for our Patreon supporters and which are a little bit more informal, freewheeling, somewhere between free therapy for me and a big old sesh that everyone who wants to get high on history with us can take part in. It's been really gratifying to see that community grow on Patreon. We are trying very hard and really, I'm going to say, need to get to 420 supporters on Patreon by 420. Please don't wait. Please join now. It will inspire other people. You can do so for as little as $1 a month. I can guarantee you, if we make that goal of 420 supporters by 420, it's going to really change things for this podcast. It's going to allow me to really do some exciting and cool stuff for all of you, and we will be getting high on history long, long, long into the future. I also want to say a quick thank you specifically to one of our Patreon supporters for a hot tip. In our most recent episode, which was called Let's Nerd Out About Weed, talking with Alec Dixon, the head of SC Labs, about really the finer points of terpenes and the biochemistry of cannabis and how exploring cannabis through the lens, literally, of a analytical laboratory has taught us so much about this plant and different strains. And I just sort of put the shout out there that as far as terpenes go, I'm really looking for that piney weed that smells like a pine forest that reminds me of a strain from a couple of decades ago. And one of our Patreon supporters hit me up and said, "Hey, knucklehead." Okay, he put it a little nicer than that. Check out your longtime sponsor, Tweedle Farms, because they've got an incredible high CBD strain called Pine Walker. And, we haven't had them on the show for a minute, but it got me re-inspired to go on their website, order myself some Pine Walker so I can grind it up with some high THC weed and make my own piney joints at home. I can't wait for that package to arrive. And if you want some farm direct high CBD products, that's flower, that's concentrates, that's edibles, gummies, topicals, all direct from a real cannabis farm run by real weed people and sent direct to you, then go to tweedlefarms.com and use the promo code GREATMOMENTS, all one word, at checkout for a 25% discount. I am definitely going to keep you all posted as soon as that Pine Walker shows up in my P.O. box, and I cannot wait to relive that incredible terpene that is just, you know, kind of missing from the gene pool. So it's nice to know it's out there. I also want to give a quick shout out. This is not a paid ad or sponsorship, to some supporters of this show who are the team behind Ciro, which is a pretty amazing bong cleaner. It uses sound waves to get even the gunkiest gunk off your glass. I got to see a demo of Ciro firsthand at this year's Emerald Cup, and I can tell you that this woman-owned company that is coming straight out of the heart of this culture from Humboldt County, California, is definitely onto something, because I saw some filthy, disgusting, dirty bongs get nice and clean in a very cool and eco-friendly way using sound waves. You know, maybe we can get something going where the sound of my voice will be able to clean your bongs in the future. But for now, this is a very futuristic product. So I invite you to check them out on Instagram. You can go to @dirtybongtalk. I think that's going to be the easiest one for you to remember. Gave you a little taste of some dirty bong talk there. And if anybody's really into that, maybe we'll explore that further on the Patreon. But overall, just remember, as I wrote in my book, How to Smoke Pot Properly, your bong must always be sparklingly clean, even if the rest of your home is an absolute shithole. Okay, now, what I've got here is not a bong, but a joint that I just rolled. It is some of my own homegrown, and that is in honor of the legend, as we said, David Crosby, rest in plants. One of the coolest parts of that episode is when he described becoming a late-in-life weed grower on his own property and growing his own cannabis after, you know, so many years of being a smoker and a connoisseur, how much he got out of that process of being around the plants, and how you really truly can grow the greatest cannabis in the world when you grow it yourself. So here's to you, Cros. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It was truly a great moment in weed history, and we are all gonna spark one up en masse together to send you on your way to the next plane of existence. But I'm hearing that you, you're not rolled up yet. And you're like, oh my God, this is a big thing. We're all gonna light up at once. We're gonna send the Cros on his way. I love the Cros. I just got some buds and I'm not. It's cool. It's cool. All you have to do is hit pause, and you can use that time at your leisure to roll yourself a joint, or to split a blunt, or to pack a bong, hopefully a nice clean one, or to endabulate a dab, to eat some edibles, whatever it takes to get you ready, because when you're ready, we'll be ready for another great moment in weed history. You know, it's no exaggeration to say this podcast runs on coffee and weed. And lately, the coffee has been top shelf because of our new sponsor, Vigilante Coffee. I grind my beans daily, no pun intended, and I do the whole pretentious hipster pour over thing every morning. And I gotta say, I really enjoy thinking about where my coffee came from and how it was grown and processed, just like weed. And just like weed, it's worth it to get the best coffee you can afford. And the good news is, if you brew your own at home, really good coffee is an affordable luxury. That's why I'm thrilled to have Vigilante Coffee on the podcast and in my mug each and every morning. Vigilante is a specialty coffee roaster that sources their beans directly from small, award-winning farms around the world and then roasts them to perfection. They support ending the war on drugs, and they want to support this podcast too because they believe that all you really need is coffee and weed. Amen. So treat yourself to a bag of their Golden Bean award-winning Dank blend, which has just returned for its fourth year. Dank is 80% Guatemalan and 20% Ethiopian. Brew that up nice and strong and pair it with a puff or two of good weed in the morning, and I guarantee you will be up and at them. To learn more or to order their amazing coffee, check out their website, vigilantecoffee.com, or you can visit one of their cafes. And if you buy a pound of those beans, well, please tell them Beans sent you. VigilanteCoffee.com. Mark, I want to welcome you to Great Moments in Weed History. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I was really fascinated by your book and very appreciative of your book because it's very difficult in some ways to tell these histories that go back so far. We think about how much cannabis history has been obscured in our own times, and now we're going back to the ancient world. So what sparked originally this idea for you to write this book?
Cannabis is something that I've always been interested in. There were times when I used cannabis, particularly in nature, where a little bit of cannabis would shift perception, shift a kind of sense of time without using a more powerful entheogen or psychedelic like psilocybin mushrooms, which are known to kind of open religious experiences, that this milder, gentler cannabis plant was still capable of eliciting the same kind of religious awakening experiences, experiences of presence, experiences of awe at the beauty of nature. And so that's when I got the idea to write this book, A Spiritual History of Cannabis, because I figured if this was something that I recognized and understood, then surely we could find references to it in all kinds of religious traditions. And I think what really brings everything together is mysticism, right? The mystical experience as a human universal experience.
That's very interesting because I think, you know, as we become more accustomed to cannabis as consumers of the plant, many of us look back to our earliest experiences and remember a kind of mystical awakening. And it's turned into this cultural sort of stereotype and even way to stigmatize cannabis. You go, oh, wow, man, far out. And right. Like, whoa, did you ever look at the back of your hand or you ever look at the clouds, man? But in essence, it's a way of expressing this sense of mysticism. And so it's not a leap to think that this goes back very far in our history. What's the earliest you can trace back spiritual use of cannabis using sort of this big definition of what spiritualistic use would mean?
Yeah, that's a good question and a hard one. The Vedic tradition would go back at least to 1500 BC, maybe a little bit earlier. But I think the real place to look for the earliest possible uses of cannabis as an entheogen would be shamanistic traditions. And this is the oldest religious tradition in the world. Various forms of it are found everywhere. And so part of a shaman's role would be a kind of knowledge of herbal medicines, in addition to a lot of other roles as a healer of the body and of the mind, is an important person in a community as a receptacle for knowledge that could be shared with the community. And depending on what culture we're talking about, shamanism could look a little bit different. So in my book, I kind of suggest that Vedic Hinduism, where we have record of cannabis and use of other psychedelics, is actually preceded by shamanism. My supposition is that the use of cannabis as a medicine and as a trigger for religious experiences goes back before written records. So even if we're talking about the ancient Vedas and references to Soma, or we're talking about the Zoroastrian tradition with their references to Halma and kind of debates about exactly what was in those medicinal formulations that triggered peak experiences, probably cannabis played a part in those, that I think we're looking back to these kind of ancient shamanistic healing traditions first.
And I think we can, if we're being honest, we can probably say the first human to encounter the plant and ingest it in some quantity would at least be a candidate for this kind of experience. It doesn't have to have a framework of any kind. It can be a direct experience. And I also think when you talk about shamans and shamanistic practices, there wouldn't have been the distinctions that we falsely, I think, make between what's medicinal and what's spiritual. The healing of this plant can be, you know, as we know, it can heal the body. It can heal things like anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder that are still, of course, physically manifested in your body, but that we think of as mental health. And if you see your spiritual health and practice as an extension of that, these clear distinctions would not really be made at that time, right? So what do we find in the first written accounts?
We do get references to cannabis directly, but I think it's the Soma ceremonies or the Soma cycles in some of the Vedas, where you have comments about the collection and preparation and pressing of this this elixir that awakens divinity. And so if we accept the possibility that one of the ingredients in Soma could have been cannabis sativa, then those would be, you know, some of the earliest references that we have. And again, in the Zoroastrian literature, and there's a connection between the Indian tradition and the migration of people to the Iranian plateau. And there's well-recognized correspondences between these traditions that what would become Vedic Hinduism and Zoroastrianism in Iran or Persia. This is not tripping out on psychedelics and, you know, just for the heck of it. This is within the context of a well-established religious tradition with all of its iconography, but also ritual. There seems to be in some of these traditions also, I mean, a real respect and reverence for the substances that would alter consciousness in ways that would create very ecstatic peak kinds of consciousness. And so I think these early uses of cannabis and other psychedelics and entheogens was sacred in the strongest sense of the word.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as we see this spiritual practice spread, we can sort of overlay another map of the spread of hashish and hashish culture. When we speak about cannabis in the ancient world, we are primarily talking about hashish. A lot of times people eating it rather than smoking it. Hashish is simply, you know, a concentration of the psychoactive elements of cannabis. It is much more portable. It's much more easy to take care of on a long journey than delicate flowers. And it's pretty potent. You know, we sometimes hear about, oh, the weed of the 60s was only, 5% THC or whatever. Well, you know, these are longstanding old hashish making traditions, and they certainly knew how to concentrate the plant into a potent form. And they certainly, you know, we have recipes for majoun, an edible that are 1,000 years old in Morocco. So I think what's interesting and what I'd love to hear you speak on is cannabis, in essence, by accessing certain consciousness states, is able to be integrated into different spiritual practices and traditions.
Yes, absolutely. The Sufi tradition comes to mind. Another thing maybe to point out is that because of the overlap between the medicinal and the spiritual, when you're talking about asceticism, religious traditions where there's a kind of emphasis on depriving the body so as to make the spirit stronger. So sadhus in India who might walk around naked and covered in funerary ash. This type of renunciation and asceticism is very tough on the body. It's pretty difficult and hard on the body and mind to be an itinerant who's renounced everything and who's begging and sleeping outside and all of it. And so there's like two sides of the use of cannabis in some of these ascetic traditions. There's, you know, the fact that it does have all of these medicinal uses that would have been understood and recognized, but also the fact that the mild euphoria, the psychedelic effects of cannabis are also something that they, as religious seekers, recognize as being able to trigger states of consciousness that they identify with spirituality, with awakening, with enlightenment. And then there's the actual integration of cannabis and cannabis smoking and cannabis consumption into ritual worship of a particular deity. Shiva, of course, the excellent show you did a couple years ago on that, your listeners might go back and have a listen at that as a kind of exploration of the way that cannabis is used in India, even today, in religious devotion and religious ritual. And so that's a really amazing kind of overlapping of effects, right, in uses. And I think that's probably why we find it in so many different kinds of religious traditions. It's actually kind of surprising if your listeners go back and look at Sacred Bliss. It is amazing when you start to kind of flip through the pages, and I divided the book into regions, and generally chapter by chapter, it's chronological. But by the time you've finished chapter 4 or 5, you've gone through a lot of traditions around the world, you know, from Asia to the Middle East to Africa, where people are using it in similar ways, and of course, different ways too, because of the way that culture is, you know, cultures differ. But again, I think underneath all of this is the human propensity for peak experiences, for awakening.
You know, one phrase we hear when we talk about the consumption of psychoactive substances for any intention is set and setting, you know, where you're going to be when you're consuming cannabis, mm-hmm. in this sense, who's going to be around, what is going to unfold. And I'm wondering, you know, how set and setting varies in these different traditions in terms of consuming cannabis. What do we know about ingestion methods? What do we know about integration with other practices like chanting? How have different spiritual practices approached set and setting with cannabis?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and complicated too, because of the number of traditions that we find cannabis use as a part of spiritual practice. The religions that integrate cannabis into their practice do it with great deliberateness, and as part of, as you said, other religious practices that might include chanting, contemplative prayer, fasting, other ritual acts.
I think in any spiritual or religious tradition or practice, you know, we tend to see this conflict or tension between the mystical side of things that we've talked about, the direct experience of these states, and the divine, and the dogmatic side of these religions, that is about bureaucracy and rulemaking and clerical control of these spiritual states and practices. Mm. And so do you see a connection to the rise of monotheism, the idea that there's one God and that, you know, these people who are in charge of this well-defined religious hierarchical organization are now going to tell you what the experience of spirituality is, rather than the mystical path being to experience these things yourself, or to have a shaman initiate you into this connection to divinity. Do you see the idea that that tension could lead to the prohibition of this plant?
I think there is a tendency to see monotheism as an advancement without necessarily recognizing the way that institutional control gets built up in monotheistic religion. So it's excellent. It's an excellent point.
We talk on this podcast a lot. I mean, maybe the most important point to take away from it is that the history of use of cannabis did not start in the 1960s with hippies, and it did not even start in the 1920s with jazz musicians. You know, these are very long traditions that go back to the beginning of the use of cannabis. There's always been cannabis culture. A parallel point is that there have been prohibitions of cannabis that long predate the modern era. So we have to ask ourselves, why is this plant that is clearly a beneficial medicinal plant, that has no lethal dose, that has very, very low potential for abuse, how did this plant become the focus of these prohibitions throughout history? And I have always said cannabis is not anti-authoritarian because it's illegal. It's illegal because it's anti-authoritarian. I believe that there's something inherent in the experience of cannabis consciousness that simply causes you to question all kinds of different things, particularly if you are accessing these higher levels of consciousness, if you're having this direct experience, whether you want to call it religious or spiritual, of course, that's going to lead you to question authority. Now, when we think of our lives in the Western world or in the United States, where we're both living, we don't tend to think of religion as the primary authoritarian force, although maybe it's coming in our lives. But in the ancient world, that predated the kinds of, you know, multinational corporations that we might think run things, or certainly the kind of global political organizations that we might think run things, the people and institutions that really did run things were these spiritual and religious movements. And I feel that at the point where these institutions become about self-protection and exploitation through expansion of the religious institution itself, rather than the accessing of these spiritual states, then this plant becomes a threat to that authority, because that authority is based on telling you what spirituality is and how to practice it. And a plant that's going to allow you to have those experiences yourself, particularly one that's easy to grow, easily accessible to people, is a direct threat. And that, to me, has got to be the beginning of the targeting of this plant. You know, to flip that on its head and to try to take something away from it now, what can you recommend to people outside of any of these specific traditions? But if you were just, somebody said to you, hey, I find this pretty interesting, and I'm, you know, I use cannabis, but more like as a social tool, or perhaps simply as a medicine for a specific ailment, but I'm interested in exploring the spiritual use of it myself, how would you approach that differently than, say, like having a few friends over to blaze a joint and watch a movie? which is also great.
Which is also great. And no, it's an excellent question. I think intention is very important. So being open to spirituality and spiritual experience. In my own life, I find a short period of seated meditation per day has a kind of clarifying effect that gets augmented, I think, by cannabis. The intention to use it as a way to open shifts in perception, I think, is really at the heart of your question. Can it happen that we're hanging out with friends, having a pizza, maybe by the lake, and we smoke some cannabis and it's a nice Northern Lights or something like that, and it does trigger something? Is that possible? Yes. And I might go about my life and never really recognize that, hey, wait a minute, that 1 or 2 seconds, 5 seconds of just the suspension of thinking, the division of the distinction between self and other, the appreciation of the beauty of the flower of the moment. Hey, that was a peak experience. Can I recognize those kind of moments in my life? What we're talking about on this show is the way that cannabis can be used as a trigger. So part of intentional use of cannabis in a spiritual context would be becoming more comfortable and familiar with these moments of perception and to find a way to cultivate them, right? To have more of them. And so I think it's a combination of recognition, intention, and some kind of practice. It doesn't have to be formal, but to create the kind of groundwork for the emergence of these kinds of experiences spontaneously in a way that we can cultivate and extend them.
Absolutely. And I think that gives us all a little homework coming out of this episode of Great Moments in Weed History. Acquire yourself some good cannabis in whatever form pleases you. Take a little time out of your life to at least try to be open to these kinds of states. You know, we've talked before on this program about how sometimes ingesting cannabis can bring people's trauma to the fore, and how cannabis can be a tool for processing that. And the reason that these traumatic thoughts or events or even feelings stored in the body might come up at that time is because there's something about cannabis that's also protecting you on a biochemical level as a neuroprotectant, and maybe in a spiritual way that is saying to you, okay, right now, maybe we can handle some of this because of this state of consciousness. Well, the flip side of that is I also believe that these spiritual moments and portals may open up to us in small or large ways while under the spell of cannabis, because that's also when we're going to be open to that, when we're going to be able to process that and experience it. And sometimes we have this, this sense that the epiphanies that we have when we're high, that our best ideas, that the feelings, you know, can be dismissed later because we're not high anymore and that's some other self. But I would say the integrating of all of these selves is a real part of actualizing ourselves as people, and cannabis can be an incredible aid to us. It is a powerful medicine in every sense of the term. It is, I do believe, as we mentioned, one of the reasons this plant has been so targeted and denigrated, and why this huge, huge, otherwise unfathomable effort to prevent people from accessing this plant has been made. So fuck all that. Roll up a fatty. I think you are absolutely right, Mark. Nature is a great place to start. And in a sense, it's where we all belong as humans. And we are all a part of nature. So Mark, thank you so, so much for writing this book, for sharing this time with us on Great Moments in Weed History and for giving us all such a wonderful homework assignment that I am very much looking forward to.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been really a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Well, that's the show, folks. Thanks so much for listening. And if you stuck around this long, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You could put $5 on it at greatmomentsinweedhistory.com. And that would really help us as we research, write, edit, and publish a new episode every Weedness Day. Great Moments in Weed History is written, produced, and performed by me, David Bienenstock, a.k.a. Bean. Special thanks to our sponsor, PAX. Go to PAX.com and use promo code GREATMOMENTS, all one word, for a big discount at checkout.